стоит за то жить.
And I hope you'll forgive me for the following special program, in that it doesn't have a Christmas theme. Instead, we'll be meeting two quite exceptional Czechs, and we'll hear them tell their own story of courage, resilience, and a touch of luck. But above all, this is a story of the enduring power of love.
Bude zítra zas, jen dnešek uchopit a pochopit, že nejkrásnější den je dnešní den, jen pro ten dnešní den.
Jaroslav and Alžběta Hofrichter have been married for well over half a century. Their friends call them the Turtle Doves, and when you meet them it is not hard to see why. At 93 and 91 respectively, Jaroslav and Alžběta are still very much in love. And if there is an elixir for happiness, they seem to have found it. What makes their story the more remarkable is the degree of hardship they have both had to overcome. I went to see the Hofrichters at Prague's military hospital, where they now live in sheltered accommodation for Czech veterans of World War II. For Jaroslav spent 4 years serving in Britain's Royal Air Force, along with some 2,000 fellow Czechs and Slovaks, a quarter of whom never came home. He returned to Czechoslovakia as a hero, but before long his record with the RAF became a thorn in the side of the new communist regime. For most of the next 4 decades, he and Alžběta were treated with constant suspicion. Here, in their own words, is the story of Colonel Jaroslav Hofrichter and Alžběta, or Elizabeth, to translate her name into English.
My name is Jaroslav Hofrichter. During the war, I all time is 311. Bomber squadron, 1943 from bomber go to coastal command. I have 580 operation hour. I have never some trouble in the operation. I have 3 Czech cross.
My name is Elizabeth Hofrichter.
And how long have you been married, the two of you?
We are married 55 years, and I must tell you, we have met with my husband, and after 6 months, we have married.
It was love at first sight.
Yes, I honor my husband very much.
And you've been happy ever since?
I must say, yes, very happy. You know, we are now in the hospital, in the military hospital, because of our age. And when my husband was able to go, the whole time he brings me flowers. I have the flowers on my table the whole year, from the first up to the last day. And I admire my husband very much.
And so what's the secret of a happy marriage for you?
Tolerance in the first time, and that one must honor the other.
And it was at a very difficult time, wasn't it, that you got married? It was at a time when your husband had come back from being in the Royal Air Force in Britain, and when the new regime in Czechoslovakia was very unsympathetic towards Czechs who had flown in the Royal Air Force.
Yes, it was really the hardest time. I am from Ostrava, and I was coming to Prague for a job because I speak, at that time, I have spoken at some languages, German, Russian, some French, and of course English. So I came to Prague, and we have met with my husband, and we have married.
Before we started recording, we agreed that we'd record this interview in Czech, because you were saying that your English is a little bit stale. So we'll move over to Czech, but I'll ask the questions in English and you can answer in Czech.
You may take off now.
Did you always know that you wanted to fly?
Pro mě bylo lítání, ne zaměstnání jako to, ale pro mě to bylo...
For me, flying wasn't a job. You just can't imagine what it's like when you're up there on your own, no one's bothering you. All you think about is the flying itself. That was probably the worst thing that the communists took from me and the others. Whenever we got together, all the lads used to say that if only we could, we'd all fly again. After the fall of communism, in 1990, we were taken in a military plane to a commemoration in Spain. And I just couldn't help going to the cockpit to join the lads who were flying the plane. You know, I first joined the flying club in Pilsen when I was 15. When the war came, 90% of us smuggled ourselves out to fight for our country. If you look at the lists of who fought in the 312 Czechoslovak squadron, you'll see that 90% were from Pilsen.
90% bylo Plzeňáků.
Jestli můžu k tomu něco říct, a sice...
I'd like to add something about my husband's friends. In the worst period in the 1950s, they were all persecuted and locked up. But I've never encountered anything like the camaraderie that existed between them. They would have done anything for each other.
Takové kamarádství jsem nepoznala.
And do you still sometimes dream of flying?
Volitání se mi zdá každou chvíli, ale když my se s klukama setkali...
I'm always dreaming of flying, and whenever we used to meet, we'd start the conversation with flying and end the conversation with flying, because it wasn't a job. We lived for it.
My jsme v tom žili.
How did you come to be in the Royal Air Force in the first place?
Já jsem utek... Československá ve 40. roce.
I escaped from Czechoslovakia in 1940. Poland had already fallen. So the only way was via Slovakia and Hungary to Yugoslavia. And then, on a group passport, we went on to Greece.
Na hromadnej pas jsme jeli přes Řecko.
And I should imagine at that time it must have been really very dangerous.
To bylo šíleně nebezpečné, ale já říkám, já jsem měl štěstí.
It was very dangerous, but I was lucky. Some of my friends were caught 3 times and sent back to the border each time. I had some Hungarian currency, which I'd exchanged with Hungarian workers in Pilsen. I managed to cross the border from Hungary to Yugoslavia near the town of Subotica. Luckily, I'd done lots of cycling with my father as a child, and he taught me how to recognize the different directions. The main thing was to keep the Polestar right behind me. I crossed a kind of ditch that marked the border. A Yugoslav policeman called out, "Who goes there?" I said, "I'm Czech." He took me to the police station, where they gave me plum brandy, rakia and a meal. They drove me to Belgrade, and at each police station the policeman explained that he was taking a Czech to fight the Germans. I was given somewhere to stay in a school with other Czechs who'd escaped, and it was great. For the first time, I really felt I was someone. We waited for a group passport. They always sent people in groups of 30. We went right through Yugoslavia, then through Greece and Turkey, and on by boat to Syria. But then Italy joined the war, France capitulated, so we continued to Palestine, where we registered with the English. The embassy gave us military passes as if we were in the army, and we waited at the airport until there were enough of us to be flown to port side. There we had to wait for a ship, and in the end we sailed to British Somalia, South Africa, and then to West Africa, where we weren't allowed to disembark as there was some kind of epidemic. We ended up traveling via Halifax in Canada with a convoy to Britain. It was 1941 by the time we finally docked in Glasgow.
A přistáli jsme v Glasgowě. No, tam jsme odjeli na Československý ministerstvo letectví.
From there, we went on to the Czechoslovak Air Ministry in London. Before the war, I joined the project Action for 1,000 Pilots, which had aimed to provide Czechoslovakia with enough qualified pilots. But I hadn't clocked up enough flying hours, and I was told I would have to go through further training. So instead, I took up the offer of becoming a radio operator and gunner on Wellington bombers. So I became a gunner, and they moved us to Coastal Command at Talbenny in Wales. And there we went into action protecting convoys and looking out for German submarines. In 1943, we were provided with Liberator bombers. So I was put on a course to become a flight engineer on Liberators. And that's what I did until the end of the war.
Given the huge casualty rates among flight crews, were you afraid?
I believe in one thing. Your fate is set out for you. You can spend your whole life avoiding danger, and then you fall off a chair and break your neck. All the other lads wrote letters, in case they never came back, to give to their parents after the war. If a crew was lost, the priest would come round and take the letters. That never even occurred to me. I was 100% convinced that nothing could happen to me. And touch wood, I've now reached 93. I've had several operations, but I've always pulled through. It's like they say in India, that everyone is born with his book of life. For some of us, it's shorter, for others, longer. And there's nothing you can do about it. I had a friend who was off duty, didn't have to join the flight, but when he saw his crew getting ready, he swapped his shift with another crew member, and he never came back. He didn't have to go, but he wanted to be with his crew. And that was that.
Já bych chtěla jenom říct, manžel je člověk, kterému se nikdy nic nestalo.
I'd like to add that my husband is a person to whom nothing has ever happened. Whatever has been going on around him, somehow it has always passed him by, no matter what it was.
Ať je to cokoliv.
With the end of the war, Jaroslav Hofrichter returned home in August 1945, together with other Czechoslovak airmen. He soon discovered that his parents had spent the war in prison. During the German occupation, this was a typical punishment for relatives of people who had gone abroad to fight. But he says that they felt proud of him, rather than feeling resentment. He rejoined the Czechoslovak Air Force and served in its transport division until 1949. After the communist coup of 1948, he had the opportunity to flee to the West, as many of his fellow airmen did. But Jaroslav was not going to leave his parents to their fate for a second time. As with so many others who had fought in Britain, his days in the armed services were soon to be numbered. The military authorities found out that on his regular flights to Britain, he was still keeping in touch with the pilots who had fled.
Well, I was sacked. They said I could only work in mines, steelworks, or agriculture. Everything else was out of bounds. Well, I'd been trained as a mechanic even before the war at the Škoda works in Pilsen. And I was given work in a state-owned factory. And that proved to be my greatest stroke of luck, the fact that it happened to be a state-owned company. Some 3 weeks later, we were all arrested. There were people like František Feitel and Otto Hruby. In all, there must have been about 40 of us. What was interesting was that it wasn't a real trial. There were six men sitting there. They would summon us. They'd ask us things like, "Where do you work?" Those who worked for someone privately or were employed by some government department were sentenced. But there were about four of us. I remember one of the others was called Bender, who worked in a state-owned factory. Bender was at the steelworks in Kladno. He told us that they could see we had a positive attitude to the new people's democracy. All the others were sentenced to hard labor at Mirov prison. What's strange is that it wasn't a proper court at all. There were just six guys asking completely arbitrary questions, shooting from the hip. There and then, they said how many years each would get. But I just carried on working at the Tesla Electrotechnical Company, and I stayed there till I retired.
Až do konce, do důchodu a čekáme do dnešního dne.
Já jsem byla služebně přeložena do Prahy.
I was sent to work in Prague at the Agriculture Ministry. At that time, in 1953, there was no one around who spoke English. So I began to work at the Agricultural Institute, which measured agricultural productivity and compared it with results from all over the world. They received material in English, so I translated it for them. Then I got to know my husband. But because he'd been in the West, he was persecuted, and as a result, so was I. I'd wanted to go to university and had even begun to study, but the moment I married my husband, I was immediately thrown out. But they couldn't sack me from the ministry because no one else spoke English. When I retired, three people took my place. I'd done the work on my own for a quarter of what they were paid.
And you never felt bitterness towards the communist regime or towards those maybe even former friends of yours or friends of yours who'd collaborated with the regime?
You know, it was difficult. Some were simply given the order that they must join the party. But what was worse was when somebody joined the party and then betrayed his own friends.
When we got married, I was living in a hostel and my husband at a friend's flat. When his friend got married, we were both able to move into the flat. The trouble was that because the authorities knew my husband had fought in the West, everybody who came to see us had to be officially announced, and the cleaner who cleaned the staircase in the building would come into our flat, and we had to show her what food we had bought and how much, what clothes we have. We had to show her everything. People started avoiding us, so my husband and I had no one but each other. Even old friends would cross to the other side of the street. My husband and I were always alone together, but it didn't matter. We got on so well.
And you didn't have children, did you?
How could we have? When we were first married, for a long time, my husband was living with a friend, and I was in the hostel. By the time we got the flat, I was already 38. We tried. We both went to see specialists, but it was too late.
Many couples live for their children, but it seems that you have a lot more to live for.
We just live for each other, and to be quite honest, these days I can't even dress myself. My wife bathes me and washes me. The top half of me is fine, but my legs. I'm afraid I'm going to be in a wheelchair soon because my legs get worse every day.
Are you afraid of that?
No, no, I'm not afraid. You know, I didn't expect to live to 93. It doesn't bother me if it happens tomorrow. I can look anyone in the eyes. I feel that what I've done, I've had to do. And there were occasions when doing that saved the lives of other lads.
We don't worry about our age, but we try to make the most of what we have. We like to go to the mountains for Christmas. We don't ski anymore, but we like it there. We go to the spa, we take a week's holiday in the summer, we do what we can.
Thanks to the Defence Ministry, the World War II veterans have the right to go to the spa every year, and they pay for it, which is fantastic. It's one of the things that keeps us going, and they're always brilliant to us.
I'll tell you one thing. I have such a beautiful marriage, and that's all I live for. Through all the awful, difficult times, we were happy. We used to go for walks in the woods. We couldn't have a beer because it cost 1.60 crown, and we only had 1.40, but we were always happy together. In the worst times, we'd shut ourselves up at home and talk together. We get on fantastically, and that means a lot.
My si úžasně rozumíme a to je hodně.
Moje máči říkala, že každý se narodí a má svíčku.
My mother said that each of us is born with a candle and that the candle starts to burn. When the time comes for life to end, the candle goes out. Everyone is born with his book of life, and each day a page is turned.
And with that, we turn the page on another broadcast from here in Prague. I was talking to Colonel Jaroslav Hofrichter and his wife Alžbieta. And thanks too to Daniela Lazarova and Stephen Weeks for lending their voices to this programme. On behalf of everybody here at Radio Prague, I'd like to wish you all the best for the rest of the Christmas holiday.
Nesmíš se ptát, co bylo včera, bude zítra zas jen dnešek uchopit a pochopit, že nejkrásnější jen je dnešní den.